Welcome to Flights of Fantasy, your romantasy podcast book club. I'm Anna, joined by my book besties, Kim and Christina. And together, we're diving into the characters, theories, lore, and magic behind all your favorite fantasy romance books. Hi, book besties. Welcome back to ACOTAR Revisited, our deep dive into the series that started it all. We are so excited to be here discussing A Court of Silver Flames by Sarah J. Maas. And just a reminder, we will be breaking up each book into multiple episodes so we can take our time with this incredible story. But before we give our official spoiler warning, we have a few announcements.
Okay, first we want to say a big, big thank you to everyone who has taken the time to rate and review our show. If you are looking for a free way to support us, rating and reviewing the show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, it truly does help us so much. So if you have already done that, we want to just say a big thank you. Also, let's quickly chat about what we've got going on in March over on our Patreon. Oh my gosh, you guys, we have such an incredible month of content going on over there right now. Obviously, we have the full video episode of our SJM Call Her Daddy interview episode. Also, for our SJM series episode, we are doing a theory episode on Gwen being a light singer. Oh my gosh, this episode was incredible. We do an almost hour-long breakdown theory about whether or not Gwen from ACOTAR is a light singer. Christina did an incredible job deep diving and researching this. You cannot miss it. Also, Anna and Christina are going to be chatting about season 4, part 2 of Bridgerton. And finally, Conform chapter chats are coming. Oh my gosh. We had the time of our lives recording chapter chats on Conform by Ariel Sullivan. We will be covering it in 2 main feed episodes on the podcast, but chapter chats are going to start coming out in March on Patreon for tier 2. You do not want to miss those. They are incredible. And then lastly, I will be doing a written post of my recent 5-star reads. I have been reading so many incredible books, from thrillers to romances, historical romances. A lot of them are on KU. And I just could not wait to get my thoughts out to our book besties over on Patreon. So be sure to check all of that out and be sure to join our Patreon family. It is incredible. We would love to have you.
And Kim, will you please shout out some of our Patreon tier 2 book bitches?
Yes, I would love to. So one of the many benefits of being one of our tier 2 book bitches is that you get a special shout out in one of our episodes. And in today's episode, we are going to be shouting out Lisa S., Carlisle O., and Katie S. Rose. Thank you guys so, so much for supporting us. We truly could not do this without our patrons.
Yes.
We are so, so thankful for all of you, for your support.
And every one of you. Thank you so much.
Yes.
All right, listeners, consider this your official spoiler warning for the entire ACOTAR series by Sarah J. Maas. So without further ado, let's get back to Prithian and chat about Nesta.
Yes. Okay, let's start with where we left off last week. So last week we had the hike conversation, the whole big climactic breakdown for Nesta at the lake. She hit her absolute rock bottom, and it was followed by a really beautiful and honest conversation between her and Cassian. Mm-hmm. And Nesta finally acknowledged all of the hurt that she's caused, and also all of the inner demons she let get in the way of her own ability to heal and forgive herself.
Yeah.
And obviously, we talked a lot about that. It was incredibly beautiful and moving. So after staying at the lake for about a week, mm-hmm. and Nesta's really working on herself, they return back to Valaris, and it is basically business as usual. Nesta gets back in the training ring, and she's working on her mental and physical strength with her two besties, Emery and Gwen. I do just love how immediately Emery is ragging on Nesta.
Yeah.
He's like, so you're telling me that you and that sexy piece of man meat over there were alone together for a week and nothing sexual happened? Like, girl, what?
I know. I love the little camaraderie that they've all found. And Emery is like the classic sarcastic, like sassy friend. Like, I'm going to call you on your shit.
Yeah.
And Gwen is like over there like, well, wait, yeah, did you? But like, did you?
But like, did you? And Emery's like, oh, they totally did. And Nesta's like, what? I don't know what you're talking about.
I mean, like, literally her and Cassian cannot stop eye fucking each other during training.
Oh, no.
Azriel is like, chill out.
He's like, damn it. I just, you guys made me come train here and now you're eye fucking each other and I'm having to take over. What is going on?
Like, this is not the chaperone job I signed up for.
Yes, exactly. Poor Azriel.
I just love it. Yeah.
But obviously the biggest change, I guess you could say, is that at this point, Cassian and Nesta are just going at it like rabbits.
Oh my God.
They are fucking every which way to Sunday. I mean,
I'm like, when do you sleep?
When do you sleep? Are you not sore? Do you not need some recovery time?
I mean, listen, if Cassian is as well endowed as Nesta alludes to, I feel like you'd need a little break sometimes.
We need some Tylenol. We need a Gatorade. We need to replenish. Like
Gatorade. We need electrolytes.
We need electrolytes.
Truly.
Where are element packets? Where are element electrolytes?
And like Sarah again has upped. I mean, rereading this, I was like, oh my God, Sarah.
Yeah.
The dirty talk. I was like, I'm just not used to reading it in Sarah's books.
Me too.
And she's like, Nesta is like, I can't stop thinking about you. Of your, she's like, of your cock. I was just like, oh,
wow.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Nesta is a freak.
I love it. I'm here for it. Listen.
I'm so here for
get it. Get you some, girl.
Absolutely. I mean, it's Cassian. Like, we are all clapping and cheering yes. for her. And we are all living vicariously through Nesta.
And you know what? That sex releases endorphins because it's exercise. Endorphins make you happy. Happy people don't kill their husbands.
Don't kill their husbands.
So.
And really, that's the most important takeaway yes. from all of this. But another important thing that happens is that Nesta agrees to go to evening services with Gwen and hear her sing. Yeah. And it is so beautiful. And we know that Nesta loves music. And that was actually one of the things that she did enjoy doing while she was on her self-destructive tour, was actually going to music halls and listening to music. Mm-hmm. Now, she was also, you know, drinking and fucking her way through the pubs, but she hasn't had that. She's been sequestered up at the House of Wind, right. and she really hasn't had access to any music. And so she goes and she hears Gwen sing, and the singing is actually very meditative. And while Nesta is there, it ends up putting her in this trance-like state that allows her to cross some magical veil and see where the third trove item is.
Yes.
The harp. Mm-hmm. And surprise, surprise, it is located in the prison.
As are most things that are interesting.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Bony sea.
Atlantis, as we'll get there.
Atlantis. Yep.
All right. So listeners, let's hop on board the magic school bus and bebop over to the prison island. I always feel like that's Christina's
yes.
part. She's always taking us on field trips.
She's Miss Frizzle
Miss Frizzle, but she's not with us today.
Right.
So now a lot happens here in the prison, and we're going to do our best to summarize and kind of run through the important bits, because I feel like that's what we're all here for, is to run through what's important going forward.
Right.
They locate the room Nesta saw in her vision, and I want to just read this quote and then we can break it down.
Mm-hmm.
Nesta studied the carvings on the floor. They all seemed to spiral toward one point. I think these are stars, she breathed, constellations. And like a golden sun, the harp lay at the center of the system. This is a night court, Cassian said dryly, but it felt different from night court magic somehow. Nesta paused before the harp, the wards pressing into her skin as she surveyed its golden frame and silver strings. The harp sat atop a large rendering of an 8-pointed star. Okay. So let's break this down. A few pages earlier, we get this quote from Cassian. Rhys told me once that this island might have even been an 8th court.
An 8th court, you say?
An 8th court.
Huh.
So yes, while technically the prison island is under control of the night court, I think what they're both sensing when they say that the magic here feels different is whatever this 8th court used to be.
Yes, exactly. Okay? Exactly. So, exactly. If you know, you know.
Pin that for mastermind.
Yes.
Also, the harp sits upon a rendering of an 8-pointed star, which we've already touched upon previously, that obviously Nesta and Cassian's bargain tattoos itself as an 8-pointed star. That's how it showcases.
Right.
I don't think it's any coincidence that Nesta being made has an 8-pointed star tattooed on her body and that the harp, a made object, is on top of an 8-pointed star.
Come on. That's not a coincidence. Sarah doesn't do stuff
yes.
like that.
Now, again, we're going to pin that for Mastermind, and just a little PSA here. There is a lot in this chapter that we have flagged for Mastermind, so I want to just quickly apologize to any listeners who are new to the Massverse and maybe feeling a little lost.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably wondering, like, well, why are we not speculating on every single little Easter egg here?
Yeah.
But just like we can't talk about ACOTAR Book 1 and pretend like we don't already know that Tamlin's a piece of shit and that Rhysand is endgame.
Right.
It would just feel disingenuous if we ignore the bigger picture. So all we will say is that we highly recommend reading all of Sarah's series so that you can truly join us on the Massverse bandwagon. It's a fun little club, we promise.
Oh, we are so fun, you guys.
A joy.
We've got buttons, we've got stickers. We'd love to have you.
Absolutely. And then you get to enjoy our mastermind section at the end of our episodes.
Right.
They're a treat.
They really, really are.
So.
Well said.
Kim, keep walking us through the prison.
Okay, so After they get the harp, they end up actually getting trapped in that room, and Nesta uses the harp and plucks one of its strings to help free them. Yeah. Now, what she doesn't realize is that because she wasn't specific with her words, we know how the Fae are, the tricky, tricky Fae, you must be very specific. Mm-hmm. The harp just took it upon itself to free someone else in the prison, and unfortunately, that is Lanthus. Yes, one of the creatures, aside from Bryaxis, that actually scares Cassian. He scares me, too. He sounds absolutely terrifying.
He sounds terrifying. Honestly, Bryaxis seems like a walk in the park.
I think Bryaxis is really just misunderstood. Absolutely. I think Bryaxis and Cassian could be friends. Lanthus, not so much, no. Now, Cassian buys time for Nesta to run away, but, she runs into the Autumn Court soldiers who were sent by Bryallen and Koschei. So what does she do? She plucks the harp again, and it takes her back to Cassian just as Lanthus strikes him. And I'm going to read this incredible quote that is such a fantastic parallel to Nesta and Cassian at the end of Akawar. Mm-hmm. But Nesta refused to hear another word, not as she knelt over Cassian, the only thing between him and Lanthus. She had been here before, had been in this exact position, his head on her lap, death laughing at them. Then she had curled over him and waited to die. Then she had stopped fighting. She would not fail this time. The mist pressed in, and she could have sworn she felt a hand reach for her. It was enough to set her moving. Drawing her sword in the same movement with which she shot to her feet, Nesta slashed a perfect combination. Nesta!
Yes, queen!
Oh, gosh, you guys. Well, first of all, it makes me so sad because she's like, she would not fail this time. And it's like, you didn't fail, Nesta. You didn't.
We're still in that part of our healing journey. She's still trying to forgive herself.
Yes, I know. It was so sweet. And I love that she was like, nope, not this time.
Not this time.
I am stronger. I have come so far, and I am not going to let death take us this time.
I know.
So she jumps up, and Nesta has actually been fighting with one of the swords that she made with the blacksmith, and she has named it Ataraxia. And interestingly enough, Lanthus is terrified of this blade because he senses that it can actually inflict pain upon him.
Yeah.
Whereas Cassian, we love you, but your siphon magic was doing jack shit to Lanthus.
Yeah.
Like Lanthus was like, oh, that's cute. Is this doing something?
Am I supposed to be scared?
Because I'm not.
Of your little bright lights.
Of your bright lights on your hands. Yeah. But then Nesta pulls Ataraxia, and Lanthus visibly is scared.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Okay, we have to break this quote down because Anna put it in the outline, and I somehow missed that Lanthus calls Nesta this, and I cannot wait to chat about this. So Lanthus goes, he seethed, I rode in the wild hunt before you were even a scrap of existence, witch from Orid. I summoned the hounds, and the world cowered at their bang. I galloped at the head of the hunt, and Fae and Beast bowed before us. What?
I've never picked up on the fact that he calls her a witch from Orid.
From Orid.
And I know, like, that Devlin and some of the other Illyrians call her a witch.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like most of the time, though, she is referenced as, like, a queen, you know, the queen of death.
Yeah.
But I don't know, Lanthus, because he's a death god.
Right.
And he's bigger and older and otherworldly. I feel like when he says something, I'm like, does it have weight?
Right?
I'm not saying she's a witch. I mean, she's made clearly. That already makes her different.
Sure, but why witch from Orid specifically?
Yeah. We don't think that's where the cauldron's from originally.
No, we have a theory about that actually in our mastermind next week that you have to listen to because I'm so excited. But when they were in the Bog of Orid, I know they were talking about witches.
Yes.
But the way that they describe them does not, to me, that doesn't sound like Nesta.
No. And they make it sound like those witches have all died out. And
right.
I don't know if it's just because he doesn't recognize who, what she is. I mean, he does, he does eventually say her name without her, kind of how similarly like the Bone Carver did, you know, it whispers to me.
Yes.
Nesta. I think her power is so extreme and so insane. And she really barely utilizes it in this book until we get to the very end, which obviously we'll wait for that discussion. But I don't know. I don't know if it's just him picking up on this immense amount of power and he doesn't know where to place her. And so he's referencing her as a witch and it feels,
sure,
her magic feels dark. It doesn't feel like starlight or sunlight.
Mm.
But it's just interesting that he calls her that, and specifically from Orid.
That's, to me, I'm like, yeah, if he had just called her a witch, okay, well,
yeah,
that makes sense because that's maybe the closest thing he has to kind of slot her into that category.
Right.
But a witch from Orid is just so interesting. This is obviously after the Bog of Orid where she's able, mm-hmm, to wear the mask. She's able to command the dead. She's able to slay the Kelpie, and Cassian and Azrael bow before her.
I mean, she's over here touching the harp.
Yes, right. With no consequence. Like,
she
it's
is
not,
very loosey-goosey with that harp.
She's like, woo!
Woo! Let's go. The harp is like whispering.
Go,
it's being like the how those creepy made objects are in any of these like magical objects in Sarah's books where they like start to talk in cryptic words.
Yes,
and I'm like, girl, I don't know if we should be plucking those strings.
She's like, I'm leaving. Nope, I'm coming back. And now we're leaving. And I'm like, all right, let's hold on. Just let's think a second. Just hold on.
I don't know if we should just be plucking strings willy-nilly. Like, we're not over here learning hot cross buns. Come on.
God, hot cross buns. Hot cross buns. Love it. That's amazing. Okay, so this part is so weird to me. Like, I don't like this. Lanthus puts a vision into Nesta's head of her ruling beside him. And it's pretty graphic and explicit.
Yeah.
And Nesta's like, ew. Like, I don't.
No, thank you.
Ew. I don't. Hardest pass from me.
Any of that.
Thanks. So naturally, she's like, well, I'm going to behead you. Because what does Nesta love to do, Anna?
Behead somebody.
She loves to behead somebody.
The girl loves to hold a head moment.
She loves it.
This is the third time.
Third time.
In a year.
In a very short amount of time.
Some might say that this is her serial killer MO.
I would say so at this point. I think three times makes an MO. Now, I'm not a detective, but I think this is the third time in a year you've beheaded someone and held their head up. I don't know. I'm just saying it's a pattern.
It makes her feel powerful.
Okay, this quote is also very interesting. Lanthus's head and corpse fell in different directions, thumping upon the stones. Strange black blood spurted from his form.
Black blood?
Black blood, you say?
Hmm.
Oh, pin that for Mastermind. Hmm. Pin it. And if you know, you know.
All right, listeners, really quickly, just something I want to touch upon. When they are debriefing with Rhysand later on after they get back from the prison and they have the harp, mm-hmm. This is what Nesta tells Rhysand, talking about her sword. She's talking about Ataraxia. A slice from it seemed to bind him into a physical form. Cassian's dagger struck true only after Lanthus had been forced to give up his mist.
Mm.
Interesting, Rhys murmured. So guys, he was in this mist-like, godlike form, unable to be harmed by Cassian, until Nesta strikes him with Ataraxia, it cuts him, and it bound him into a physical form, and then Cassian was able to deal a harsh blow, and it stuck.
Right.
So a theory or something I think we need to look out for in ACOTAR 6, because obviously Koschei is still going to be the big bad, I think, in that next book, and we're just scratching the surface with him.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, because Nesta made three of these blades, and if Eris keeps one.
Oh, right.
Possibly Eris has one.
Right, they gave one to Eris.
Right, but he has one, and then there's another sword. She has the great sword, there's a short sword, and then the blade. And I wonder if Koschei's soul is in this, like, box, right, that has been talked about.
Yes.
Could we somehow, like, trap him, put him in together into a solid form like Lanthus, and that's the key to destroying him?
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, my God, Anna, yes.
I feel like they have to come.
Oh, they have to be setting this up.
Yeah. I don't know why else she would have made three.
Right. And three is kind of like to me, it seems a little bit magical. Like, I know sevens also can be magical.
Yeah.
But the fact that she made three, she has one, Eris has one, and then we have another one.
And there's also Truth Teller.
Right.
I don't know if Truth Teller could do that too, because Lanthus refers to it as like a death sword.
Ataraxia.
Yeah. And then we know Narvin was also a death sword.
Mm-hmm. It's lost.
Amarantha apparently chucked that into the sea and it's lost. Doubt it. Show me the body.
Right. Show me the body. Also, I believe it says that Narbin was destroyed because Amarantha threw it into the ocean. And I'm like, in what world is throwing something into the ocean destroying
it? Yeah, no, sorry. Especially a magical trove-ish item. Please.
Right.
Please.
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 Like, you're just giving it a bath. You're not destroying it.
You're just cleaning it.
So where is it?
Yeah.
Let's figure that out. Yeah. No, I completely agree. And I think there is something. That line, I think, will be very important because Koschei is a similar situation where you can't bind him. He can materialize and be this, like, illusion mist. So how do you kill something like that? Well,
yeah.
They just did.
Yeah, they just did.
So interesting.
All right.
I want to quickly walk through this very sweet moment that Cassian and Nesta have because I love them, but we don't get very many really sweet moments between them for most of this book.
I know.
So Cassian and Nesta are talking and he says, Ataraxia. And Nesta could have sworn the blade hanging from her belt hummed in answer as if it liked the sound of his voice as much as she did.
Aww.
They neared the end of the tunnel, but Nesta paused him with a tug on his hand. What? He asked, scanning the cavern. But she rose onto her toes and kissed him lightly. He blinked with almost comic shock as she pulled away. What was that for? Nesta shrugged, her cheeks heating. Gwen and Emery are my friends, she said quietly. But I think you might be too, Cassian. Cassian's silence was palpable, and she cursed herself for laying bare that wish, that realization, wish she could wipe away the words, the stupidity. And he interrupts, I've always been your friend, Nesta, he said hoarsely. Always.
Oh my God, I love them.
Stop!
That's so sweet. We pick at like the crumbs, you know?
Yes.
Of these sweet moments, because it's always hot and heavy and sex or anger and...
Right.
And a lot of sarcasticness, which is great. That's their love language.
For sure.
But when you get these moments, it just makes it so much sweeter.
Agreed. It is is so, so sweet. And I love seeing this normalness with them, like a normal couple that's still kind of figuring things out. Mm-hmm. But you can tell they're, I mean, obviously they're mates, but we're not ready to have that conversation quite yet, but we will get there.
All right, listeners. So speaking of Nesta, obviously this whole book's about her. Yeah. It's time for another mental health check-in with our girl. Yay. We were really at the bottom last episode with the hike, but like we said earlier, it really does end on a beautiful note with Nesta beginning a healing journey that feels more solid this time.
Yeah.
I think previously in the earlier parts of this book, she was forced into this by everyone, right? I mean, she was essentially sent to timeout.
Yes.
At the beginning of the book and when they had their intervention.
Right.
And while, yes, the training obviously was helping her both mentally and physically, I feel like there was a big shift at the lake with Cassie, and she's vocalizing her rage and grief out loud, as well as actually showing true contrition for her past behavior.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that lake was a shift of now Nesta making the choice to move forward in her healing journey, which I just think emphasizes a dominant theme throughout the ACOTAR series of choice being so important.
Yes.
And I think you can lead a horse to water. You can't make it drink. People have to want to get better and do that for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how much you want someone to better themselves or to make a good choice, there's only so much you can do on the outside. It really has to come from within.
Yeah.
And I think that hike was Nesta's trigger.
I agree.
Which, you know, I think now brings us to her finally feeling okay enough and secure enough in herself and in her journey of healing to go to the cottage, which is where Kim is going to pick us up here.
Yes. So a really big step in Nesta's journey to forgiveness and navigating through her grief and trauma is obviously examining her relationship with her father. So she and Cassian take a trip back to the cabin, the one that we all saw her, Feyre, and Elaine live in at the start of A Court of Thorns and Roses, the one that she shared with her father. And to understand where Nesta's headspace was in regards to her father, we have this quote from the very beginning of the book. Fassa, she hadn't seen the enchanted human queen since the war had ended, since the young woman had tried to speak to her about how wonderful Nesta's father had been, how he had been a true father to her, helped her and won her this temporary freedom, and on until Nesta's bones were screaming to get away, her blood boiling to think that her father had found his courage for someone other than her and her sisters, that he'd been the father she had needed, but for someone else. He had let their mother die, and his refusal to send his merchant fleet hunting for a cure for her had fallen into poverty and let them starve, but had decided to fight for this stranger, this nobody queen peddling a sad tale of betrayal and loss. Number one, I forgot about this thing that Vasa tells her. What the fuck? That makes no sense to me, Anna.
It makes no sense. And it honestly, when you read that, it really does put a different perspective on why Nesta struggles so much with her father showing up at the end.
Yes.
And why she feels such guilt that he did finally show up. But when he did, she was still so lost in her own hate and grief and resentment that when he dies, that's the feeling she still has.
Right. So she's like
stuck. It wasn't this, here's the father who's always been there for me, who's always shown up, who's never let us down, and he dies and there's so much love. No.
Mm-mm.
That's not the feeling she had.
But to see, this is so weird to me. And I guess I don't understand why this man could do all of these things for a complete stranger, but he couldn't do it for his daughters.
And of course, we obviously don't get his POV.
Right.
You know, Feyre gets taken. They get gifted a bunch of money, right, in the mansion.
Yeah.
But then all of his daughters are taken.
Yeah.
And is that the catalyst? Is that the straw that broke the camel's back? That all my daughters were taken and I have nobody and I failed them and so now... But I'm just like, I mean, I don't want to say a little too late because what he does is very important and obviously helps turn the tide of that war in Akawar.
Yes.
And it showing up is better than not showing up at all.
Of course.
But it does, it is complicated. And it, we talk about this. We have a complicated relationship with him throughout the series.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to lie. I kind of forgot about this because Akasov is the book that we have all reread the least amount, I would say. Like, we reread the first three by far the most.
Agreed.
And so I completely forgot about this entire conversation with Vasa. Yeah. And I'm not going to lie, it kind of sours because you guys know, like, that scene where he shows up always hits for me. And I don't know why it makes me cry. It's just so emotional where he's like, he had failed them for so long, but he wouldn't fail them today or now.
And he says, my Nesta. And
my Nesta. And he's standing on the Nesta. And that's the ship that he chose to lead into battle.
I know.
And it was was just this beautiful thing. And it still is, but I'm not going to lie, him doing all of this for a complete stranger while he sat in that cabin and let his family starve and had his youngest daughter go out into the forest and hunt. And like Nesta says, he had let her, their mother, die in his refusal to send his merchant fleet hunting for a cure for her.
Yeah, she also says at some point when they're in the cottage, she says, the moment that broke him was not my mother's death. It was losing all of his money and his merchant ships. That is what broke him, and he never came out of it. Which, I mean, to be fair, the mother seems like a piece of work.
Actually, you know what? Yeah, that's true.
But I'm like, but it's still, and I guess, you know, it's just a classic old-timey view of a man's, you know, identity being tied to his wealth.
To his livelihood.
Yeah. And providing. But when push came to shove and shit actually hit the fan, you didn't provide.
No.
You wallowed.
You sat there and did nothing.
Yeah.
I just don't understand. You don't know this person. And then he went to Koschei, a death god.
Yeah.
And bartered with him for Vasa.
Where was this sense of courage? As Nesta even says,
right,
a decade ago.
I'm not going to lie. Now I'm like, yeah, you know what? I get it. If I were Nesta, I would be so resentful of my father of like, oh, now you show up because this random firebird came and peddled you this sad tale. And then you're like, yeah, let's rally the troops. But you let our mother die and you let us waste away in this disgusting hobble.
Yeah.
I'd be pissed.
I'd be pissed too.
It's so interesting. And I just wish that we had maybe gotten something from him. I don't know. Like, it's just weird to me.
Yeah, I agree. Showing up at the end of Akawar hits all of us in a very big way.
Yes.
And also, like you said, we have reread Akasoft the least of all the books in the series. And honestly, I didn't have that quote you just read with Vasa was not one that I had originally had highlighted. Mm-hmm. So it was like, it didn't even register really to me in my couple reads of the book. And it was this time.
Yeah.
You know, every time you read a book, or specifically a Sarah book, I feel like we pick up on new things, right?
Yep, absolutely.
And we've all talked about how going into this book has been a different journey than the previous times we've read it.
Yeah.
And I was looking at Nesta in a different light.
Yes.
And seeing that, I was like, whoa, I don't remember that.
Absolutely, because this feels so validating for what she's been saying. Like, really? We still weren't enough? At the end of the day, yes, I'm sure part of it was, obviously his end goal was to help his daughters, but that wasn't what got him off his ass.
No.
It was a complete stranger.
Yeah.
As a parent, I don't know how you watch your children starve and live in a hovel, and that's not enough to get you off your ass, but a complete, this whole thing was so eye-opening. This reread was so eye-opening. Opening for me, and now seeing this, I'm like, yeah, Nesta, yeah, I, you know what, this is valid. This is a valid crash out because
100%.
This is bullshit.
Exactly.
It's complete bullshit.
She's not nice in the beginning. She's mean. She's awful.
Yeah.
But the way I think she internalized her father's behavior is so different from her sister's.
Mm.
And I don't know if it's because Feyre was so young and childhood resilience is a thing that's actually studied, and like, she was so young when they lost everything. She was so young when they moved into the cottage. And this is, I mean, basically kind of really all she knew.
Yeah.
Growing up through her adolescence. And then you have Nesta, though, who has knew what they lost and processes it different than Elaine.
Yes.
So it's just, definitely. It's just interesting. Anyways, we get to the cabin.
Yes, sorry. So we're at the cabin. We're at the cottage. And Nesta is showing Cassian around. And this was so rough. And Nesta is so embarrassed that Cassian is seeing this rundown shack that she called a home. And there's stained sheets and boots with holes in them. And she's just being so vulnerable. But he is such a calming, reassuring presence for her. It says, she inhaled through her nose, exhaled through her mouth, counted the breaths. Cassian stood beside her through all of it, not speaking, not touching, just there should she need him, her friend, whom she'd asked to come here with her, not because he was sharing her bed, but because she wanted him here. His steadiness and kindness and understanding. She plucked another figurine from the mantle, a rose carved from a dark sort of wood. She held it in her palm, its solid weight surprising, and traced a finger over one of the petals. He made this one for Elaine, since it was winter and she missed the flowers. And Cassian says, did he ever make any for you? And Nesta says, he knew better than to do that. She inhaled a shuddering breath, held it, released it, let her mind calm. I think he would have if I'd given him the smallest bit of encouragement, but I never did. I was too angry.
I love the mind stilling that she's doing.
Yes.
Processing, and I'm letting it go.
And letting it go and letting it kind of calm her before she speaks in anger.
Mm-hmm.
It just really shows how far she's come. And like you said, there's obviously a huge shift at the lake, and you really see that here.
I agree. And so Nesta, in this same scene, is showing Cassie in the bedroom, the bed, the dresser that Feyre painted.
Yes.
And her eyes drift, like you said, to the fireplace, and she sees the rose, the carved rose, but she also sees the small cot that her father slept on. She says this, "My father slept here for years, letting us have the bedroom. That bed in there, I was born in that bed. My mother died in that bed. I hate that bed." She ran a hand over the cracking wood of the cot's frame, splinters snagged at her fingertips. "But I hate this cot even more. He dragged it in front of the fire every night and curled up there, huddling under the blankets. I always thought he looked so, so weak. Like a cowering animal, it enraged me." And Cassian says, "Does it enrage you now?" And she says, "I thought him sleeping there was a fitting punishment while we got the bed. It never occurred to me that he wanted us to have the bed to keep warm and be as comfortable as we could. That we'd only been able to take a few items of furniture from our former home, and he'd chosen that bed as one of them. For our comfort, so we didn't have to sleep on cots or on the floor." She rubbed at her chest. "I wouldn't even let him sleep in the bed when the debtors shattered his leg. I was so lost in my grief and rage and sorrow that I wanted him to feel a fraction of what I did." Her stomach churned. He squeezed her shoulder but said nothing. "He had to have known that," she said hoarsely. "He had to have known how awful I was, and yet he never yelled, and that enraged me too. And then he named a ship after me, sailed it into battle. I don't understand why." And Cassian just says simply, "You were his daughter."
Oh my gosh, this gives me goosebumps. It is...
It's so hard because... So we just had that whole conversation earlier, less than a couple minutes ago.
Yeah.
And... then you read this, and I'm going to be honest, when I read it this reread, I've never been that emotionally tied to this chapter, mm-hmm. and I was actually had tears in my eyes reading this because I felt like I could feel Nesta's vulnerability in that moment, uncomfortability in saying these things out loud.
Yeah.
And I think that if you have a complicated relationship with a loved one, especially a parent, and then they die... I think that can bring up so much stuff. And I think Nesta looking into this room and seeing that bed and realizing that maybe this is what her father could offer them in his own way. And that it's like you have to meet people where they are sometimes. And in that moment, it doesn't matter. You're still and I'm not saying everything we said before still stands.
Absolutely.
But it's interesting that I think her way of moving past this is realizing this is what he could give me. Yeah. And I just have to accept that. And for my own well-being, let it go.
Yeah, because he's gone.
He's gone.
And like that anger is only hurting Nesta.
Yeah.
It's not hurting anybody else but Nesta.
Yes, exactly.
So she has to let it go.
Until she lashes out at other people.
Right. She does hurt other people.
But that's a great point. She has to heal that part of herself so then
she does.
She can be kind.
Yeah. And I think ultimately it's she has to let it go knowing that she's not going to get closure with her father.
Yeah.
And that's probably really hard. And I would struggle with that as well.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to get to have this conversation of like, why weren't we enough?
Yeah.
Why couldn't you do this for us? And who knows? Maybe what he would say wouldn't even be helpful, but it's that she didn't get the chance or the option or the choice to do it. It's that he died with all of this unresolved shit between them.
Exactly.
And now she has to choose, well, I'm not going to get that closure and I still have to let it go.
And her closure is going to the cottage and choosing to let it go.
Yes, exactly.
She says when they're leaving, she says, "I think I just needed to see this place one last time to know we got out, that there's nothing left here except dust and bad memories."
Oh, Nesta.
Which is really, really sad.
It is sad.
I mean, I'm not going to lie, that place doesn't sound happy at all.
No, sounds terrible.
But it's really, really sad to be looking at the place where you essentially, aside from, I mean, she was older, so it's not like her childhood home, but like,
yeah,
it still is. It was a formative part of her life.
Yes, absolutely. Totally.
And that's going to leave a mark, and like just letting it go has got to be hard.
It does.
But healing, hopefully, you know.
Yeah, and I think so. And I think it was good for her to see like that they got out.
Yes.
And that they're not here anymore and that they've moved forward and they're all somewhat happy. Happy to have varying degrees.
Yes.
You know, it's a scale.
It's a scale.
Okay, let's move on to the ball.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, I cannot wait to talk about this.
I cannot wait.
This was hilarious. So at the Winter Solstice gathering in the Court of Nightmares, Nesta is put on display beside Elaine while Feyre and Rhys play a very dangerous political game with Aerys.
Mm-hmm.
Cassian is barely holding it together. He is furious that Nesta has been dragged into this and terrified that one wrong move could expose both their secret relationship and the truth about Nesta's power. Now, Rhys and Feyre gift Aerys a family heirloom that we know is actually the dagger Nesta made.
Yep.
And when they do that, the tension spikes in the group, but Nesta barely reacts. What does catch her attention, though, is, of course, the music. And Feyre volunteers Nessa to take her place on the dance floor with Eris because Feyre is pregnant and so therefore can't be. You'll see Nessa's about to get real athletic and Feyre's like, I can't be doing that.
I could never do that.
I could never do that and I'm also very pregnant. So Nessa goes on the dance floor with Eris, and the way Sarah writes this is absolutely insane.
I love it.
She is like moving with such intensity and total control, and she commands the entire room, and Eris is like,
people can't look away.
Look away.
Yeah.
They're entranced by her, and Eris is caught off guard, and he's like, oh my God.
Who is this goddess among us?
Who is this goddess? I must have her. And you know, I will say it is really nice to see Nesta so confident and in her element, because we've seen her with the training. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that did not come naturally for Nesta. And I'm so proud of her, and she's come so far. But dancing is obviously something that she really excels at.
Yeah.
And obviously, this is a very calculated move by Nesta and the inner circle. But she dominates this dance. She dominates this moment. I do just have to say, you guys, the way Sarah writes this is like, I actually don't even understand what's happening, because it says she did 12 pirouettes and her feet actually levitate off the floor.
It's insane.
What?
At one point, they were like, she's about to undertake one of the hardest spins in the dance. Nobody attempts it because you risk looking the fool. And then she does it so perfectly and effortlessly. And I'm just like, she's spinning in a circle so fast that she levitates.
Like, guys, I
danced. I'm sorry. I know she's powerful.
She's powerful, but I danced for 10 years and I've never seen or heard anything like this in my life. We have this funny moment going over the outline where we were like, is this like Feyre and her art? And like, canon is actually that Feyre is not a great painter. And Nesta's not that great of a dancer, but everyone's like, wow, Nesta. I'm going to read this quote. Guys, this is from Cassian after seeing Nesta dance. This is what he says. Nesta's mother had wanted a prince for her. Cassian now thought she'd undervalued her daughter. Only a king or an emperor would do for someone with that level of skill. Guys, what are we saying?
Like,
that because she's a good dancer, she deserves a king or an emperor?
Like, do you dance all day?
Is that all you do?
Is that all you do? What?
You, there's more to being a ruler.
She can only be with a king. Her dancing is too good. I'm like, what do you expect her to, like, I don't understand the qualifications.
I don't understand what we're doing here. Like, what do you mean?
I'd like to see this application process, please. I have questions.
There's other skills that you have to have.
It's just so
funny the way Sarah writes this, where everyone is like, I've never seen such a thing in my life. And I'm like, yeah, she's a great dancer. But like, Eris is like, I must have her now.
Wait, do you know when she's, okay, when she's spinning so fast, she levitates?
Yes, of course.
We have kids. So like, I've seen the Mary Poppins movie so much lately. Mm-hmm. There is a scene in Mary Poppins where Julie Andrews, Mary Poppins, they're doing a dance off, essentially.
Right.
Turn of the century. Dance off on top of the roofs with the chimney sweepers.
Oh,
and
yes,
she jumps
yes.
up and she levitates. She spins so fast that she levitates. As I was reading this, I was like, she's Mary Poppins it.
Do you think that's where Sarah got it from?
I don't know.
Does she take inspiration from Mary Poppins?
All I can see is Mary Poppins in her little red dress outfit.
Yes,
and she's
I love
like
that outfit.
Spinning on top of the rooftops, and everyone's like, step in time. Like,
step in time.
I was dying laughing.
Wow, Anna, that's hysterical. And that's now FOF canon that Sarah Jubilee Mask got inspiration from Mary Poppins for this.
It had
scene.
To have been.
So
had to have
maybe
been.
That's what it is.
Okay, so Nesta and Eris finish their dancing. Eris approaches Rhysand and Feyre, and he makes an offer for Nesta's hand in marriage.
You guys, immediately.
Yeah, I know. But what's most important from that little takeaway is that Cassian hears this, because Rhysand speaks mind to mind, lets everyone hear the conversation.
Sure.
And it just brings to the surface all of his insecurities about not being high Faye and feeling less than, and pin that for when we get to a mate check-in later with Cassie and Nesta. But I just have to say the fact, like, just going off of what we were just talking about, like the fact that Eris was so moved by her dancing that he's like, I must have her to wed. I don't want this magical family heirloom that I sense great power from. No, I want her.
Her. And literally he's like, I'll give you anything. To Rhysand and Feyre.
I'm like,
guys, what?
What is happening?
She's a good dancer. Like, I
also,
don't.
Here's the thing. If it was like a sexually seductive dance, I could understand Eris being like, well, she's probably really great in bed.
Right.
But no, this is like Bridgerton.
No, this is pirouettes. Yes.
I don't get it.
I need to understand what I'm not seeing. Yes, it sounded fantastic. Don't get me wrong. It sounded very impressive. But the fact that everyone is like falling over themselves, and Cassian's like, she deserves an ember. And Eris is like, I'll give you anything for her. I'm like,
I'll give you anything. He's like, apart from my firstborn child, I'll give you anything. I was like, wow. Okay. I think we all need to learn the tactics of negotiation a bit more.
I think we're all showing our hand a little too much here. Like we're all doing, we're falling a little too much. This is too much.
Let's take a beat.
Wild.
Wild. Absolutely hilarious. Also, I just want to note that Farrah, so when they're discussing this whole, like, we need to woo Aerys, Farrah immediately is like, Elaine can't do it. I don't want Elaine anywhere near him is what she says. I don't trust him. But she's like, here's Nesta. Here's my sister. And then, of course, everyone's like, well, and obviously Farrah can't do it because Farrah's pregnant.
Sure.
And I just, this coddling of Elaine is obviously, I think, going to come up when we get her book eventually.
Oh, yeah.
But I just wanted to bring that up because, Kim, take it away. There is this great scene that Kim's about to walk us through in the winter solstice.
Yes. So, okay, we are back at winter solstice, you guys. Wow, what a difference a year makes. We've come quite a long way since the last winter solstice at the townhouse. If we remember, in A Court of Frost and Starlight, Farrah essentially bribed Nesta to come to the winter solstice last year, and we know how that turned out. Not well.
Yeah.
But this year it's different. Nesta is there because she wants to be there, and she's there with Cassian, and there are so many sweet moments to break down. But let's kick it off with this kind of funny moment between Elaine and Nesta. Elaine?
I love this.
Yes, Elaine! Elaine asked Nesta if Farrah paid her to be there this year. Okay, she, little potato.
She's growing claws. She's becoming interesting.
That's right.
Nesta said.
Yes. So Elaine asked her this, and Nesta, without thinking, goes, oh, fuck you, Nesta snapped, and then choked. Elaine blinked. Nesta blinked back, horror lurching through her, and then Elaine burst out laughing.
I mean,
I love this. And Nesta's, she's horrified and she is, apologizes, but Elaine actually sees it as a good sign. Like her older sister is no longer coddling her because she can actually like speak her mind and not be worried about upsetting Elaine and hurting her feelings.
I actually loved this moment. And I think earlier Nesta in the book, we would have been like, oh, God damn it.
Yeah.
But no, it works in this moment. And also it's, again, it's that sibling dynamic of I'm allowed to say things to you that nobody else is allowed to say.
Yep.
You know, because we have been through the same shit.
For sure.
And I love that she was just like, fuck you, Elaine.
Oh, fuck you.
Elaine's like, wow, that was refreshing.
Yeah. You're not coddling me. Okay, I kind of like this.
I love it. I love it.
And then we have a really sweet moment between Azriel and Nesta. And this is really important because we have definitely sensed a kind of connection and a sense of ease between Nesta and Azriel. And I think it's also really important for Cassian to see that comfortability between the woman he loves and one of his best friends, because we know it's not happening between Rhaesian and Nesta.
Nope, sure is not.
They're not there yet.
Nope.
But Azriel gives Nesta a reading light for her books. And Nesta is so shocked and she stands up and throws her arms around Azriel and gives him a very, very heartfelt thank you. And it is so incredibly sweet.
I love it. I love
that. I love this moment.
I love that everyone like freezes like, oh God, what's she going to do?
Is she going to hurt him?
No, and she just like throws his arms around him. And I love what you said about like, I think it's important for Cassian to see one of his brothers.
Yes.
Also have this camaraderie with Nesta.
Because of course you want your family to get along with the person that you love. I mean, everybody wants
that. And it's important for Nesta to feel accepted.
Yes, because we know that so far she has not really felt accepted with the inner circle specifically.
No, and that is one of the things that comes up in their big fight later.
Right. Yes. Oh, okay. But we have to talk about this very cryptic moment with Azriel. Anna, please walk us through this.
Okay. This was interesting to me. So Azriel's standing in the doorframe. He won't come fully into the room. Mm-hmm. And Nesta walks up to him because, again, they have a little ease going between them. Mm-hmm. And she says, she's talking about the holiday and like how holidays can be hard. And she was trying to, I think, make Azriel feel comfortable because she thought he was uncomfortable being in the room full of people. Mm-hmm. And he says, talking about holidays, that they pull people together and bring them joy. They are a time to pause and reflect and gather. And those are never bad things, he says. And then it goes, his shadows darkened, his eyes full of enough pain that she couldn't stop herself from touching his shoulder, letting him see that she understood why he stood in the doorway, why he wouldn't go near the fire, his secret to tell, never hers.
Okay.
Okay. I want you guys to listen to this quote from a previous page. Right before that happens with Nesta, this is where everyone is sitting in the room. Moore lounged on a green velvet couch before the fireplace. Amryn sat in Varian's lap on the matching couch opposite her. Feyre beside them, a hand on her belly, re-sprawled in an armchair. And then Lucian and Cassian are over in the corner on another armchair.
Yeah.
The only person who is mentioned to be by the fire is Moore.
Yep.
Elaine does eventually go sit in between Varian and Feyre, which is also by the fire, all it says is Elaine the Wretch had taken the seat between Feyre and Varian about as far from Lucien as she could get.
But it specifically says that Mor is the one lounging by the fireplace.
And I'm going to be honest, I feel like we have a whole little section on Gwynreal and Elreal at the end of this episode, so we're just going to kind of hold our tongues for most of this here. Mm-hmm. But I just want to pin this because I think when we get to ACOTAR 6 theories eventually, mm-hmm. we're going to be talking about all of this. And I think Sarah is almost trying to throw everyone off the scent.
Yeah.
Because is this about Mor?
Right.
Is Mor the red herring and it's really about Elaine? But then we have all this stuff with Gwyn also that comes up in this book.
Right.
Which we'll get to at the end of this episode. I just found it very interesting.
That is so interesting. And I had never noticed that before. And to me, I would think this is Mor.
That's what I thought too.
I still don't think things are resolved between them. And I don't think they will until Mor talks to Asriel and tells her the truth.
Yes. But why does Nessa say his secret to tell? That makes me think it's about her sister. And not
Mor. Oh, yeah. Because everybody knows about Mor, right? Or do they?
Yeah, it's like the unspoken, nobody talks about.
Sure. But yeah, the secret sounds like Elaine.
I don't know. It's very interesting. I just feel like Sarah is purposely trying to be cryptic and be like, which way am I going to go, guys?
Oh, yeah. I totally agree, Anna.
All right. Moving on. We wanted to do a little mate check-in with Nesta and Cassian. Guys, this is one of our favorite parts in the book. We have come such a long way with the two of them. And it feels so intentional that on the same holiday where the year before Nesta was so brutal to Cassian and he literally chucked her gif into the river.
Oh
God, that was awful. We are back here now after a full year of growth, healing, and doing the work. And this time, this is when they finally start to open up and they actually talk to each other about how they feel.
Yeah.
Granted, they do it in a classic Nesta and Cassian fashion.
Yeah, but
but, you know, it is what it is. So let's break this down.
Yeah.
Okay, so first of all, we get an apology from Nesta about her past behavior, which is thrills me. Guys.
You know we love an apology.
You know we love an apology.
And it's not that hard.
It's not that hard. It's just an I'm sorry and there's no but.
That's right.
She just apologizes. I love it. Also, he gives her a gift.
Yeah.
And it's the Symphonia. And she's like, I don't have a gift for you. Like, I wasn't prepared. I think, you know, she's still coming to terms. She's been through a lot. We can give her grace.
Absolutely.
But he gives her the Symphonia and she's looking at it and it's this music box. And Cassian says he chased down the musicians who played at the ball that they were all at. And he had them play her favorite songs and he had them throw in a few extra. Like, he went through so much effort to give her this.
Yeah.
And she is so overcome. And she is just honestly overwhelmed. Overwhelmed by it, and she feels unworthy.
Of course.
And she's like, I can't accept this. You have to return it. I can't take it. And Cassian is not happy about that. That obviously hurts him.
Yeah, because he feels rejected.
Yeah, he feels rejected. And what he says is, I see. I get a little too close and you shove me away again. Back to where it's safe. Better to marry a viper like Eris than be with me. And she says, I am not with you. I am fucking you.
Nesta. Ugh.
And then he goes, the only thing fit for a bastard born brute, right? And she says, I didn't say that. He says, you don't need to. You've said it 1,000 times before. She says, then why did you bother to cut in at the ball?
I love this.
Oh, God. I love this from Cassian. He goes, because I was fucking jealous. You looked like a queen, and it was painfully obvious that you should be with a princeling like Eris and not a lowborn nothing like me. Because I couldn't stand the sight of it right down to my God's damn bones. But go ahead, Nesta. Go ahead and fucking marry him, and good fucking luck to you. Oh, God. And then Nesta cuts it and she's like, Eris is the brute. He is a brute and a piece of shit. And I would marry him because I am just like him. God. Okay. The words echoed through the room. His pained face gutted her. And she says, I deserve Eris.
Oh.
And then she continues and she says, you are good, Cassian, and you are brave and brilliant and kind. And I would kill anyone who has ever made you feel less than that, less than what you are. And I know I'm a part of that group and I hate it.
Mm.
And she continues, you are everything I have never been and I will never be good enough for you. Your friends know it, and I carried it around with me all this time that I do not deserve you.
Oh,
and like the fury kind of falls from his face.
Yeah.
And she says, I didn't deserve you before the war or afterward, and I certainly don't now. Why do you think I shoved you away? Why do you think I wouldn't speak to you? And she says, after my father died, after I failed in so many ways, denying myself you, it was my punishment. Don't you understand that? She could barely see him through her tears.
Oh.
From the moment I met you, I wanted you more than reason. mates. From the moment I saw you in my house, you were all I could think about, and it terrified me. No one had ever held such power over me, and I am still terrified that if I let myself have you, it will be taken away. Someone will take it away. And if you're dead, it doesn't matter, she whispered. I do not deserve you, and I never, ever will.
Oh, wow. This is so beautiful. And again, I think that my biggest takeaway here is how vulnerable she's being in front of him. And she would never have let herself say this even a few weeks before this.
I think it's just highlighting both of their insecurities. Cassian saying, I'm a brute, of course, go marry princeling like Aerys. And Nesta being like, I deserve a bastard like Aerys because I am a bastard. I'm an asshole.
Yeah, I'm a piece of shit, and so is he.
And I should be with an asshole.
Right.
It's just really beautiful. I also really like the parallels here with Rhysand, and Rhysand being so worried about his happiness being taken away at the end of Acawar. And Nesta saying, like, if I had you, I'm worried it would be taken from me.
Sure.
And also Pin, when she says, your friends know it. Like, they know how much of a piece of shit I am, because again, next episode when they have their fight.
Yeah, it's rough. So let's move on into this conversation. We get this absolutely beautiful moment. Oh, Cassian. Cassian stood before her, tears streaming down his beautiful, perfect face. She didn't balk from it, letting him see her like this, her most raw, most base self. He'd always seen all of her anyway. He opened his mouth and tried to speak, had to swallow and try again. Nesta saw all the words in his eyes, though, the same ones she knew lay in her own. So he stopped trying to speak and closed the distance between them, slid a hand into her hair, the other going around her waist and tugging her against him. He said nothing as he dipped his head, mouth brushing the tears sliding along one of her cheeks, then the other. She closed her eyes, letting herself savor his lips on her over-hot skin, the way his breath caressed her cheek. Each gentle kiss echoed those words she'd seen in his eyes. Cassian pulled back and remained that way long enough that she opened her eyes to find his face inches from her own. You're not going to marry Aerys, he said roughly. No, she breathed. And then he says, there will be no one else for either of us. Yes, she whispered. Ever, he promised. Nesta laid a hand on his muscled chest, letting the thunderous beating of the heart echo in her palm. Ever, she swore. It was all he needed, all she needed. Cassian's mouth met hers, and the world ceased to exist. The kiss was punishing and exalting, thoroughed and frenzying, a claiming and a yielding. She had no words for it.
Guys.
Finally!
Finally!
Oh my God.
It's like, you're mine, I'm yours forever. Yes, forever. Let's go.
Forever
let's do this.
And ever. Amen. We're mates.
I love it. Oh my God.
Oh God. It's so beautiful. And then they have mating bond sex, guys. Specifically this line, golden threads between their very souls.
I mean, mates.
I love this. It's so them, like you said. You know, we can't have this like tender, just very like soft and gentle. And he's like, there's going to be nobody else. Like, say it. You promise. And she's like, yes.
It's not chapter 54 with Rhysand and Feyre, and it's so sweet. And we get that beautiful monologue. It's the Lord of Bloodshed. It's, you know, our Illyrian warrior coming in. And they love that fight. They love, you know, it turns them on.
Oh, they love it.
And then it's like, you're mine. I'm yours. Like,
oh, God.
We're mates. Well, they don't say that, but not yet.
Right. Not yet. But I love it so much. I love everything about this. They have obviously very hot, explosive sex because it's them and that's what they do. I also just totally forgot that Cassian like jumps out of bed the morning after and he's like,
oh my God.
Shit, I gotta go. He's like, I gotta go to my snowball fight.
I just, Nesta's like naked in bed and he's like he's stumbling. He's like, get the shit, they're gonna beat me there. It's like, I'm imagining him being like, they've already started making the snowballs. I'm gonna be behind on the snowball making. And then like, Nessa's like, I am so sorry. Hold on. We had last night.
Right.
And now you are leaving me to go throw snowballs at you are grown ass 500-year-old men.
That's correct.
And he's like, yeah, but then like we get into a sauna naked.
Together after. He's like, so think about that. And she's like, oh.
I will.
We all will. I love this. It's such a fun moment of like levity after like such a very intense scene between the two of them. And again, we're suckers for like a bat boy brotherly love moment.
Love it. We love it so much. All right. So Cassie and Nesta have their beautiful explosive night of passion. It's like their version of the winter cabin, like we said.
Yeah.
Minus a lot of the paint.
Which I love.
Absolutely. That's totally fine with us.
I prefer that, actually.
But Cassian does disappear for a few days, which we know is because of the mating bond clicking into place. And he was trying not to act like a crazy alpha hole and freak Nesta out. So he stays away. But Nesta doesn't know that yet.
Right.
But during his absence, this is when Nesta has Gwyn and Emery over for their sleepover, which we've already discussed in a previous episode.
Yeah.
And also the ribbon cutting gets introduced.
Yay!
Guys, I love this.
Yeah.
So Gwyn explains that this is the final test in becoming a Valkyrie. Mm. So they've been trying and failing for weeks to do it. Cassian's back now at this point. Mm-hmm. And it's Gwyn's turn again to try and cut the ribbon. Mm-hmm. Gwyn whispered, "I am the rock against which the surf crashes." Nessa straightened at those words. As if they were a prayer and a summons, Gwyn lifted the blade. "Nothing can break me." Mm. Cassian's throat tightened, and even from across the ring, he could see Nesta's eyes gleaming with pride and pain. Emery said, "Nothing can break us."
Oh!
The world seemed to pause at the words, as if it had been following one path and now branched off in another direction. In 100 years, ooh, 1,000, this moment would still be etched in his mind, that he would tell his children, his grandchildren, right then and there. That was when it all changed.
Wow.
I love it. It's that shift. They are becoming a unit.
That's right. This to me seems like, is this going to come up somehow in ACOTAR 6? Like the world seemed to pause at the words.
I feel like because the Valkyrie have died out, that the world, the cauldron, the mother, whatever, pausing and being like, oh, we have a new race of warriors as, well, they weren't a race, but you know what I mean? They were a group of people.
Right. They were a group. Yeah.
And we're back. Something new is happening here, and this is big.
Yeah.
And so anyways, she does cut the ribbon, and she's the first to successfully do so. And Nesta goes to where the ribbon fell on the floor. And it says, Nesta bent down, picked up the fallen half of the ribbon, and solemnly tied it around Gwyn's brow, a makeshift version of what the priestesses wore atop their heads with their stones. But Cassian had never seen Gwyn display her invoking stone. Gwyn lifted trembling fingers to her brow, touching the ribbon with which Nesta had crowned her. Nesta's voice was thick as she declared, Valkyrie.
Oh my God. I could not love this
love
more.
It so much. I just love
it's so beautiful. The pride and the joy on Nesta and Emery's face. Like they are genuinely so happy for Gwyn. And it's such an incredible moment for the three of them. It's so beautiful.
It's just the beautiful, like full circle, found family. Mm-hmm. Nesta, Emery, and Gwyn had to do it together.
Yeah.
And it was so important for them. There's no jealousy. There's no one is thinking I'm not worthy or anything like that.
Right.
Like Cassian says, there's genuine pride on Nesta's face.
Yes.
Beautiful.
It is so incredibly beautiful. I love it. So final thing that we want to note here about their training is that Emery and Nesta do eventually also cut the ribbon, but Cassian and Asriel have also been setting up obstacle courses for the women to train on, and they have to learn to work as a team, a unit, and after lots of trial and error, the three of them do eventually complete one of the obstacle courses. And what they don't realize, and what Cassian only tells them after they've completed the course, is that it was actually one of the courses used for the Illyrians to qualify to participate in the Blood Rite.
Yep, sneaky, sneaky.
Yes, sneaky Cassian. And he even invited Devlin to observe, mostly to prove to Devlin that females are just as strong and capable as male Illyrians, but I think also to have some kind of like a see they can do it, they can qualify for the Blood Rite.
Yes.
Which we will get into next week.
Okay, so listeners, we want to leave you with this. We promised we would touch upon Gwynreal and Elreal a little bit.
Yes.
So I obviously think this will not surprise any of our longtime listeners that we are firmly on Team Gwynreal.
That's right.
But don't tune us out if you disagree, because we have no hate for the Elreal shippers. And there is definitely a case for Elaine and Asriel. It's just not our personal preference.
Right.
But hey, we can all disagree. We can all agree to disagree and still be friends. I do just want to note a few things here. We have SJM mini episodes on our Patreon right now where we break down and discuss everything that happens in Asriel's bonus chapter, as well as a cauldron chat with Christina entitled A Case for Gwynreal.
Yes.
Between those two episodes, we really break down all of the receipts for Elreal and Gwynreal. Some of them are a little biased, but in our Asriel bonus chapter, we break down Elreal a little bit more.
Right.
Obviously, whenever Sarah decides to grace us with ACOTAR 6.
Whenever that is.
Whenever we get an official release date.
Yeah.
Bet your bottom dollar. I promise we will have so many ACOTAR 6 theories episodes and prediction episodes. Those are our favorite to record.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling that this subject of who Asriel ends up with is going to be a main topic of conversation. Goes without saying.
Absolutely.
But this is Nesta and Cassian's story. Guys, it's not Asriel's story. And that's why we're not taking as much time to focus on them here. But you can go listen to our episodes on Patreon. They are really fun.
Yes, they are. They're really, really, really good. And As Anna said, we are going to be doing so much ACOTAR 6 theories and predictions and deep dives when we get that. Mm-hmm. We just don't know when Sarah's going to grace us with that yet. So
Nope. And we want to save it so that we can like relish the moment and live in it when she does bring it to us.
Absolutely.
So listeners, that is where we're going to leave you today. We will be back next week with our final ACOSOF episode. Oh my gosh. It will wrap up our entire ACOTAR Revisited journey.
Oh,
we're going to talk about the blood rite and the crazy ending. Plus, of course, our mastermind section.
Guys, you do not want to miss this mastermind section. This has like some of my favorite mastermind theory Easter eggs that we've ever done.
I'm so excited.
It's going to be so great and also so bittersweet. I can't believe it's over. This has been like almost a year.
Oy, that's so true. Yeah, it's been a year and I think it's extra emotional because it was our first episode we ever recorded as a podcast and we're closing it out. It's also kind of coming out right around our anniversary of when we released our episode, like end of February. This is coming out in March, but like it's close enough. So it's just been a really fun journey. So we will save the sorrow.
Yes.
The weepy, bittersweet conversation for that.
Yeah, next for that episode. Okay.
Bye, listeners. Cheers and happy reading.
Well, friends, that wraps up another episode of Flights of Fantasy Podcast. Don't forget to join our book club community on Instagram and TikTok at Flights of Fantasy Podcast, where you can share your thoughts, theories, and favorite moments with us and fellow listeners. We'd love to hear from you. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. Your support helps us spread the magic of romance to even more book lovers. Until next time, keep dreaming, keep reading, and remember, every good story deserves to take flight.